Firstly, we'd like to thank everybody for coming this morning's share. I believe this morning's share is a special share, exciting share. Every time we do a halachic personality, I think it's a big deal. And the person that we're describing, I'm happy. I got both reactions. Some people heard of Rav Gussman, but many people did not. And in a certain sense, when you give a share on a personality, on somebody that that is not as so well known, so I think it's a big deal. It's a big schuss to make them known to the broader Torah world. We entitled the shir, Rabbi Yisrael Gussman, The Prodigy Posek. And I don't use those words lightly. Let me give one detail. Why would I call him the Prodigy Posek? We did give a shir, I believe last year, on Chaim Ozer Gradinsky, the author of the Achiezer, really the Gadol Hador in the era of great Gedolim, pre-World War II. This Rav Gussman served on Rav Chaim Ozer's Beis Din in Vilna at the age of 22. At 22 years old, ask yourself, what were you doing at 22? At the age of 22, this Rav Gussman was one of the top leading judges in the Jewish world. Really, in modern times, there wasn't such a great kavod, a great situation like that. Somebody so young being on the Beis Din, to put it in perspective, being part of Chaim Ozer's Beis Din, one of the times they had a Beis Din, it was Reb Chaim Ozer, the Chafetz Chaim, and Rav Gussman. Those are the three on the Beis Din. Chaim Ozer, the Chafetz Chaim, with the Gedolei Hador, and Rav Gussman was 22 years old. They had a Shaila, okay, when you have a Beis Din of three, the person in the middle is, you know, that's the most chashiv. Who should sit in the middle? The Chafetz Chaim or Reb Chaim Ozer? The Chafetz Chaim was putting on Reb Chaim Ozer, Reb Chaim Ozer was putting on the Chafetz Chaim. What'd they end up? Rav Gussman sat in the middle. If you can imagine such a picture, such a scene, that's where it was Rav Gussman. Yet, Rav Gussman was nifter not so long ago, 1991. But Lamaisa, a few decades later, many people in this room, probably many people watching this, didn't really hear of him. And for that alone, it's a tremendous mitzvah to speak about him, to appreciate him from a halachic perspective, which we do over here in Shir. And hopefully by the time the Shir is finished, we'll have a greater understanding who this giant was. I'll quickly go through his bio. When you hear his biography, it adds to the question, really, why is it that many people never heard of him? It just makes it so much of a bigger question. He was born, I believe, in 1908. His father was a chashuv of a person, but I believe he was worked as in the lumber industry. Yeah, he was born near Bialystok. At the age of 12, he went to the major yeshiva of Grodno, which the Rosh Yeshiva was famous Rav Shimon Shkop. At the age of 16, he was already a baki, an expert in Shas Bavli and Yerushalmi. His chavrusa in yeshiva, I believe, was older than him, was someone by the name of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, later becoming the famed Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva. That was his chavrusa. At 22, he married and, you know, got a job as part of Chaim Elazar's Beis Din, Paschal, that he went through the war. And we'll talk more about that. Him, his wife, and a daughter survived the war. So much so, it was a chiddush, people didn't know he survived. He was one of the, he literally went, you know, some people got escaped. He didn't escape. He lasted from the beginning through the end of the war. Survived. And after surviving the war, he, we'll talk about some stories, but for the most part, left Europe, came to America. Actually, his first job in America was Rosh Yeshiva of Chabad Lubavitch Yeshiva. He stayed there for a little tekufa. Following that, he started, Reb Moshe Feinstein pushed him to take that position. Following that, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky pushed him to start his own yeshiva, which he did. He opened the yeshiva in New York, I believe actually first in Crown Heights. He opened his own yeshiva. That was probably in the 50s. In 1971, he moved and really moved his yeshiva to Eretz Yisrael, to actually Rechavia, which is still there today. And he was nifter 20 years later, in 1991. So you're talking about somebody who was a famous posek in Europe, establishes one of the relatively earlier yeshivas in America, yeshiva in the 50s. His yeshiva goes to Eretz Yisrael in the 70s. Yet, there are many that don't remember him, don't know of him. I always knew of him well from his Gemara Shirim. There's a Sefer Kuntrisi Shirim, multiple Svarim of his Gemara Shirim. But actually, one of the biggest challenges in preparing this share and giving this share is that in terms of Psak Halacha, there's not so much found from Rav Gussman. There's a Sefer there on the table, Halichas Yisrael, which has some Psakim of Rav Gussman. There's another Sefer really by the same author, B'Mechitzas Chachmei Yisrael. I found random Psakim in some other Svarim, but really his own personal tshuva is never published. And there isn't so much halacha recorded from Rav Gussman. But luckily, I have to give a big hakara satov. The Rosh Kol of Chicago, really in the first kolim, community kolim in America, Rav Moshe Francis, big Talmid Chacham, availed himself. He was actually, he was away in, he's away in Eretz Yisrael. He afforded me, I have a familiar connection. I asked him, he was a Talmud of Rav Gussman, both in America and later in Eretz Yisrael. So I asked him if he would speak to me about it. So he said, sure, after I finish with my chavrusas. He calls me up. He calls me up 5 p.m. That's 12 a.m. Eretz Yisrael time. Moshe Francis is not a young person. He founded the second Lakewood Kollel in the world. You know, it was Toronto and then Chicago. He stayed with me on the phone. You know, I told him I'm nervous, you know. Timing, we hung up the phone, it was close to 1 a.m. And he was just so excited to talk about his Rebbe, who he felt so close to. And I got some very interesting tzak and very interesting halachas and stories from Rav Moshe Francis. And it should be a big schuss for his Rebbe Rav Gussman. So as we do in these halachic shurim, halachic profiles, I want to try to pin down three elements that I've seen from the psakim, from the stories about Rav Gussman, and to present it as that. Obviously, we're just scratching the surface of somebody that, you know, if at 22 he was on the Chaim Elazar's Beis Din, it's really hard to understand a person of that depth, of that understanding, but we'll try. One thing I found very much in his psakim is he was somebody that was very into Masorah. Many of his psakim, we'll see, come from Reb Chaim Ozer. He had a Mesorah from Reb Chaim Ozer. And he was very focused in on, okay, we got to do, you know, from the earlier generations, what the great poskim Rabbanim did. That itself is quite an amazing feat, especially for somebody that's so advanced, so himself, you know, was a big machadash. He had a great head, but he was still nevertheless tied very much to Mesorah. I'll give you one halacha. It's actually on a few halachas that I found on the sheets, on top, I believe, top of the sheets. There's a discussion about the halachas of Chazaras HaShatz. And it is common, you might find in the yeshiva world, that, you know, or even, you know, right, shuls. But even in the yeshiva, you'll find people that are learning during Chazaras HaShatz. And the Asher of Gusman, what should be when the Chazan's going over Shimon Esrei? And Rav Gusman said, you should be following along. And he didn't just say it as his own psak halacha. He gave edus. I saw Rav Chaim Ozer followed along. I saw Rav Baruch Ber follow along, word for word. Now he does write, his Rebbe was Rav Chaim Ozer. He says, the fact that Rav Chaim Ozer was following along word for word doesn't mean he wasn't learning. Rav Chaim Ozer is famous being able to write two tshuvas at the same time. His mind was so amazing that he was able to do it. So it could be he was following Chazaras HaShatz and thinking and learning at the same time. But he said, the Levaisa, he was still fully following in Chazaras HaShatz, right? I remember years ago, when I was by Rabbi Bluth, Big Talmud of Ramosha, he revealed quite a personal story. He said to us one time, he sent his wife with a shayla to Rav Gusman, and Rav Gusman didn't just pass in the shayla that his wife showed him. He also sent back a message. Tell your husband he's being too machmer. This isn't the shayla. It wasn't just an issue of psak. Rav Gusman had a picture of a mesorah of what's the normal way of doing things in Klal Yisrael. If somebody comes with the shayla, he shouldn't be hawking something like this. And he sent back that message. I remember Booth, like, you know, like, no qualms. He told it to us. Gusman put him in his place. Rabbi Francis told me a very interesting story. Rav Gusman, and he did this based on what he saw from other Litvashe Gedolim. Again, this is in those times. Did not wear his tzitzis out of his pants. Right? We just recently went through a few shiurim about tzitzis, right? Forget about of wearing your tzitzis like the Hasidim and some yeshivish people today over their shirts. We're talking about, are your tzitzis sticking out? Rav Gusman's were not as well as, and he, based on the fact that that's what other Litvashe Rosh Hashivas that he saw back in Europe didn't do. And that's what he was following. Yes. I mean, there's one Rebbe in Yeshiva always used to talk about this. Yes. So here it is. That's what my friends told me. My friends told me one very interesting thing. And we'll talk about this story more. Thursdays, Rav Gusman gave a shir, which is open to the broad public. Community Gemara shir. That Gemara shir wasn't just for Talmidim and Yeshiva. All the intellectuals of Yerushalayim came to the shir. You had college professors from Hebrew University. right? You had scientists, you had the full gamut, Haredim and Zionists, all together in one room to hear a shir of Nisrav Gusman. I don't know, I'm not a bucking in the inner workings of what went on in Eretz Yisrael in the 70s, 80s, but I assume that's quite unique. And it seemed a place to be. Rav Moshe Francis noticed, always during that share, there was like at least one of his tzitzis were out. And he said it didn't make any sense, because Rav Gusman was a very put-together person. So you're going to tell me that every Thursday when he gave that share, somehow his shirt was out of his pants, his tzitzis were out? Didn't understand it. It bothered him. He said, 40 years later, you know, it takes sometimes 40 years to understand your Rebbe. And Francis came across, he was going through the sugya of Ayin Hara, and it's brought down that there's a certain danger when a person's giving a share, especially a very big popular share, public, of an Ayin Hara. And one of the things that wards off an Ayin Hara is tzitzis. So when Francis told me that he believes the pshat, and he said he told it over to, I think he told me, the son-in-law of Rav Gusman, and he was masked him, that probably was the pshat. That was the one time he had to sit this out. But other than that, very careful. Moshe Francis told me a very interesting story. I'll tell it backwards from the way he told it to me. Gusman was once by Lavaya with Chaim Moser. Again, young Dayan, the experienced Posek, and a man gets up there and gives an absolutely beautiful hesped for his wife. Beautiful, beautiful hesped. As they're walking out of the Levaya, Rav Chaim Ozer turns to young Rav Gusman and says, "This man did not love his wife." Rav Gusman was like, "What?" His jaw dropped. How you tell me he didn't love his wife? Just give the most beautiful hesped. Chaim Ozer said, if he really, really loved his wife, he would be so tzebrachen, he wouldn't be able to get up there and give such a fabulous speech. He wasn't a speaker, it wasn't this, but he said, Rav Chaim Ozer was able to tell from the emotions, the way he gave over the speech, there's something lacking there. That story stood in his head. Rav Moshe Francis said, you know when he told me this story? He says, the yeshiva, Gusman's yeshiva is a small yeshiva. And basically, everyone in the yeshiva had to daven for the Amud. So Francis said, one time they pushed him, the Gabbai asked him, he daven for the Amud on Friday night. He never daven for the Amud before. But up to the daven, he said he still remembers he had this like very, you know, pocket-sized little sitter. He called it a very pre-art scroll. A very economy class sitter, where they printed even the Friday night davening on the same page as the weekday Myra of davening. Just on the bottom, there is like an asterisk that you end the last bracha of Berachos Kriyat Shema slightly different on Shabbos. Well, he missed the asterisk. And he finished the end of the bracha the way you do the rest of the week. And a big taram happened in the, you know, yeshiva. Everyone was talking about it, this. And Moshe Francis, as a balker, said he felt so horrible. Like he was up for the first time he's down for the Amud. He made a mistake. Everyone was hawking about it. He became the talk of the yeshiva. Everyone debating, you know, what to do. He says, Rav Gusman comes over to me after davening and says, Moshe, don't worry. You're good. You did well. He says, I want to tell you a story. And he tells him over the story of Chaim Ozer about the Levaya. And he says, you know, Shabbos is an emotional time. The Shekhinah is there. Lechadodi lekras kala. If you don't have emotions, there's something lacking. So, okay, you got too emotional with your tefillah. You missed one little thing. Don't worry about it. He said that gave him a lot of chizuk. Stam is such an interesting story. The perspective. I found another story. A woman, Rachman Tzal, went off the derech. And she was coming back, but she was struggling with her past, all the things she failed in before. And the question she had was, she was a married woman, and there are many Friday nights post her going off, she didn't light Shabbos candles. We know there's a minug, right, to add candles for any week you missed. So this lady came to Rav Gusman that she's going to have to light 500 candles.
Fire hazard.
Right? Fire hazard, right? So Rav Gusman said to her, looks at her, said, you should give a penny for tzedakah for each Friday night you missed. Just keep on lighting the candles. Okay. Cute idea. Where'd you get it from? He said, I got it from my Rebbe, Rav Chaim Ozer. Chaim Ozer said, when it comes to tshuva, you have to understand what the person is able to do. when you see, you as a Rav, see what the person's able to do, and you paskin, okay, this is what I see you could do, and you do, he says, that psak is then accepted in the Shemayim. He says, that's a Masorah he has from Chaim Ozer. This would, so he wasn't just paskining, coming up with chaps. So many of his psakim were things he saw from his Rebbeim. When he was older, he started putting on a gartel, started putting on tefillin of Rebbeinu Tam. They asked him why. Says, this is what my Rebbe did. He saw of Shimon Shkop, when he got older, took on the chumras. So that's what he did. Very much staying in line, Masorah, what his Rebbeim did, what he saw. I'll tell one other story I came across, very interesting. Right after the war, the first Yom Kippur, he went back to Vilna, right? I don't know from all the songs and the stories, but he went back to Vilna, and all the shuls were destroyed. There was one shul in Vilna which was not completely destroyed. The shuls were demolished. One shul, one of the biggest shuls, the Beis Medrash of the Vilna Gaon. The Graz Beis Medrash was not destroyed. And not destroyed means three out of the four walls were knocked down. But the fourth wasn't, the Mizrach, whatever, and it had there, you know, had some Azkara of the Vilna Gaon there. That stood. Everything else was destroyed. And the survivors needed a place to daven. And Rav Gusman was the survivor. He was the Rav of Vilna. And they had some put up walls around, and they had a minyan that Yom Kippur. How many people did they have that Yom Kippur? 3,000 people. 3,000 survivors with their davening in Vilna. In the Graz Shul, Rav Gusman was a Rav, he was giving drushas. And he said it was a very, obviously, very intense, moving experience at Yom Kippur. He says, not long after Yom Kippur, doesn't say exactly, was it a day, 2 days, the entire building collapsed. Rav Gusman, in retrospect, said it was a nes. It didn't collapse in Yom Kippur. He's sure, you know, the Masorah, the fact that everyone really wanted to connect to the Vilna Gaon and David and his shul was a schus for them. These people suffered enough, and there wasn't a collapse on Yom Kippur after the survivors, the 3,000 survivors who were there that Yom Kippur in Vilna. So I think these are all examples of a person who, despite being a genius, many of his psakim, if not all of his psakim, were based on shimush that he got from his rebbeim, and very much paschal with the Masorah. And if somebody was going off in halacha, not with the Masorah, he would express that. Rabbi Bluth got that. I think there's another fascinating aspect about Rav Gusman. I call it the balance of his anava and yet his achrayas, his responsibilities, humility, but at the same time he took responsibility. There's a story after the war. The story is actually originally told about the Stipler, but it seems the real protagonist was Chablina Rav Chashuv Tam Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe this is probably in Europe. After the war, he meets this young survivor. Asks him what his name is. He says, Gustman. He says, Gustman. Was your grandfather the dying in Vilna? He's like, no. Your uncle? No. Your father? No. It's like me looking down. And then the father, Doss is the dying in Vilna?
The Tribliner Rav was so taken aback. He immediately made the bracha, Shecholak mechachmasi reyav. You give a bracha when you see a person on the highest level of chachma. He's honestly, you're that great. One of the ways he survived actually the war is by shaving his beard. And he shouldn't be recognized as one of the Rabbanim. And Lemaisa did it. At the same time, I found that after the war, he passed in hundreds and hundreds of shilos of agunas. And so he was a humble person, but he took on himself the weightiest of questions, shilos about agunas. It was very interesting. After the war, he was, like we said, he was the Rav in Vilna. He had no svarim. How's he pop, you know? Aguna shilos are the toughest shilos. He was able to find one volume of the Sefer Noda Behuda, which that volume had tshuvas about agunas. So just with one Sefer at his disposal, he was able to utilize it, paskin and matar, hundreds of agunas. That's how great he was. He took the responsibility. He was an anav, but he knew who he was. And he took that responsibility and was able to paskin. Another amazing story, which shows his anava. During the Yom Kippur War, Rav Kosman himself didn't see the background. Did the yeshiva shut? Did the yeshiva open? But it seems in the afternoons or nights, he spent time volunteering in the hospitals in Eretz Yisrael. He was a volunteer. So one of the stories I was actually going through, Rabbi Francis was telling me, Hashem Yishmar, right? He was telling me in the 70s when he was there in Eretz Yisrael, there was only one emergency room open each night in Eretz Yisrael. And it was a Torah Nut. They rotated the different hospitals. Hadassah, Shari Tzedek. He said one time there was a kid, Bachar Yeshiva, he needed to go to the ER. They went to one hospital. They said, no, we're not open. Go to the other one. They went to the other hospital. No, they spent going, took them three hospitals till they found the one that was open. That's how small, you know, bureaucratic, but small Israel was in the 70s. They had one hospital in Yerushalayim open and an ER at nights, rotating on a rotating basis. So during the Yom Kippur War, Rav Kusman volunteered in the hospital doing things. I guess in the little downtime in the hospital, there was some foreign, probably American Bacher, who was also volunteering. Rav Kusman was such, no one knew who he was. So there was a Bacher learning Gemara. So he sees an older man who was also helping out in the hospital. He says, come, let's learn a little Gemara. And this yeshiva Bacher is sitting there teaching Gemara. Rav Kusman sat there. And the yeshiva Bacher started teaching him Gemara. True story, it gets better. Okay, didn't know who he was. Rav Kusman didn't say a word. Seems sometime later, this yeshiva Bacher, you know, heard about these fascinating, amazing shirim in Rechavia, in this yeshiva. He went to hear the shir. Who's standing up there in that yid from Yom Kippur War, yeah, in the hospital. His student. Like, can you imagine a gadol just sitting there? Yeah, it's nice. The guy must have felt, well, I taught the old man Gemara today. Yeah. Rav Moshe Lehrfeld told me a story. His brother, Rabbi Yaakov Lehrfeld, was a Talmud of Rav Kusman. So I wasn't able to get in contact with him. But Rav Moshe told me a story. Also, only an Eretz Yisrael story. Rav Kusman's yeshiva in Rechav wasn't far from something like a nursing home or something of the like. And the yeshiva Bacharim used to go to Mechazik maybe once or twice a week. And it seems with it, they would eat dinner there. The Hashkacha there, I think it might have been a Rabbanut Hashkacha. And the Kanoim of Yerushalayim found out that the Rav Kusman's yeshiva Bacharim were allowed to eat in this place with quote-unquote, you know, unrecognizable hashkacha. Obviously, Rav Kusman felt it was okay. So the Yerushalayim bandits come into the yeshiva, want to meet with them. They say, Rav Gusman, we heard of you, that you know, you're Rav Chaim Moser's Bezdin, very chashava yeshiva. Look, you know, we can make you famous. We can make you famous. Just one thing, you know, it's pasnished for your Talmidim to be eating in this place. So if you tell them this, not if you stop that, we'll make you famous. And then they said the other side. And if you don't stop them, we'll destroy you. No one will know who you are. We'll blacklist you. If Gusman stares them in the face and says, you can't give me kavod, you can't embarrass me. You can't give me kavod. When I was 22, Chaim Moser stood up for me. I can't get any more kavod than that in my life. And you want to pain me? He says, my one son was ripped out of my hands when he was 4 years old and killed in front of me by the Nazis. There's nothing you could do that could cause me more pain. He says, sorry, I'm not budging. He was a tremendous anav. He could learn with a yeshiva bacher, but he had the strength and the wherewithal. You're going to threaten me? I passed and it's okay. They could do that. Just before, Reb David told me a story. It's also from the book. After surviving the war, one of the heads of the Mir Yeshiva, Belaib Malin, came to America, and he finds out everyone's drinking Chalv Stam. The Chalv Stam, Reb Moshe Feinstein holds, has a din of Chalv Yisrael, but everyone's drinking the regular milk. There was a gas. How could this be? Didn't really hear of Reb Moshe Feinstein, but he found out there's a Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. This is in the summer. Gets Reb Moshe's number, calls him up in the country. Reb Moshe Feinstein, you permitted milk, right? What's going on? He said, yeah. Basically, for the next hour, this is a big Talmud Chacham, he's debating Reb Moshe. But Reb Moshe's getting nowhere. This guy's not giving in. Chashav Leib Malin was a lion. Reb Moshe then chop for a second. He's like, in the bungalow colony with him was Rav Gusman. He said, you know, you've heard of Rav Gusman? Oh, he's alive? He remembered him from Vilna. But Rav Gusman, shh. He says, what if I told you that Rav Gusman agrees with my psak? Can't be. He put Rav Gusman on the phone. He spoke to him. He's like, mask him. He didn't accept this Moshe Feinstein. But Rav Gusman, okay. We'll take that. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So Rav Gusman was someone, on the one hand, was a tremendous anuv, but at the same time had the strength, the backbone, to stand up for his psalkim. You weren't going to sway him. You can't give me kavod. You can't give me bizyonos. I'm above that. And he did what he thought was right. There's a third area that I want to talk about, and this really hit me the most. His sensitivities in terms of halacha. His Talmidim quote the line that Rav Gusman says, you can't pask in the shayla for an individual until you first understand that in person. You understand that person, their life situation, where they're coming from, then you could really paskin the shiloh for them. If you don't understand the person asking the shiloh, then you really can't paskin. That's a yisod that he had in Psak. And what that really meant, he would shy away from answering questions of people he didn't know. Say, go to someone who knows you. If they would ask him the question, he would make them ask it multiple times to get clarity in who the person is, where they're coming from. And what that also means, that could explain, is he'll give one psak to one person. It's useless for somebody else. It was tailor-made for that person. But he really strived to understand people and only then offer psakim. Same thing. Got this from Chaim Moser. He was on his bezdin. He did shemesh with him. One amazing story. First, I'll give an example. It took me a while. I was going through all different things. Rav Gusman said one of his toughest shilas to Paschal was the following shila. There is a person, it sounds like a kolo person, who was a big masmid, very into learning. At the same time, he was, you know, not sleeping enough. And he'd have shilas. He was a married person. Shilas, his wife was nervous. This person's not taking care of himself. What should he do? And Rav Gusman would sit there, hear out every minute of the person's day, and there would talk about it, and this person very much was machshav Rav Gusman. Rav Gusman would paska, and then every 5 minutes of his day, what to do. And this person would come, if he wanted to accept upon himself 5 more minutes of learning, taking away from, let's say, his sleep, this person's wife would send him to Rav Gusman, and Rav Gusman would sit there, and he says this is one of the toughest questions that he had to deal with. I first read this, I'm like, why is this such a... Okay, I hear the question. Because you really have to understand the person. You have to understand not just the person, the dynamics of the wife and the family and how it affects other people. And that's really schwer. You really have to get into the person's shoes. There was a story, I just saw this yesterday also. Someone asked him a shayla, and he was sitting and pacing for 2 hours after that shayla. Mom was pacing back and forth, back and forth. So I was telling the master, Rebbe, sounds like a shayla. Shayla. Rebbe couldn't find him a car. He said, no, I had him a car 2 hours ago. I was not sure if it was applicable in this situation. So I spent all that time trying to put myself in that person's shoes to understand where he's coming from. That's the type of posik he was. With all his brilliance, with all his mastery of the Masorah from Reb Chaim Ozer, from Reb Shimon, from Europe, but he had to see, did the Psak Halacha fit the person? If it didn't fit, you must acquit. Didn't fit, you have to see the halacha that fits for the person. One of the people that, before I get to that, another story. Two very interesting psukim. This, both of Moshe Francis told me these two shilas. They're in his yeshiva. He allowed for boys to go to college. So, in the afternoon, boys left to go to college. And the thing that meant was they had less, those boys who were going to college had less time to learn. Because of that, Rev Gusman paskened that the Talmidim could eat lunch inside the Beis Medrash, which normally there's an interesting shayla. Are you allowed to eat in the Beis Medrash? So, but he reasoned there was a tzad to matar. Plus, being the fact that these Bachrim have less time to learn because they're running off to college, if they'll be able to eat while they're learning in the Beis Medrash, they'll save more time. So he matered it. Again, balancing the sensitivities of the person vis-a-vis what's needed, the Psak Halacha. Francis told me this other very moving story of how I believe the protagonist in this story was Baruch Bera's grandson, named Emmanuel, Emmanuel Leibowitz. And basically, he cut his hand, cut both of his hands in an accident in the dorm in the yeshiva. And he ended up being all bandaged up. That was actually the time, my friends told me they were running to 3 different emergency rooms in Yerushalayim. And he had these bandages on for like a long time. But Rav Gusman viewed himself really as the father of his Talmidim. It wasn't just a Rebbe. And Francis told me he remembers the scene, you know, the person had to have the bandages on for, let's say, 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, he could take off the bandages. The Bacher walked into the Beis Medrash. Rav Gusman called him up, came to the front of the Beis Medrash. Rav Gusman himself, in the middle of the Beis Medrash, was the one who unraveled, took off the bandages of his Talmud to make sure everything was okay, after a couple weeks of healing. Taking off bandages in the base medrash. Going to the bathroom, the hallway. He understood what the right thing was in each situation, the sensitivities. Yeah? Gusman had a lot of cover for a base medrash. He was a person who was not, he was actually machbid, Francis told me. Right? You know, some shuls, they have a gartel gemach, right? Going down for the Amud wearing a gartel. Right? He was, of course, machbid. They had to wear hats and jackets down for the Amud. But one very interesting thing, the down for the Amud in his yeshiva, he also had to wear a tie. I don't know if they had a gemach there for the Baal Tefillah, but if you're the Shliach Tzibur in his yeshiva, you also have to wear a tie. So he was someone very much makbid and kavod. It wasn't. But at the same time, kavod based medrash, the sensitivity of what a person needs, he was able to figure out the correct halacha. Yeah. I must tell two amazing stories. One of the people that came to his Thursday afternoon share, which we said was not just Talmidim in the yeshiva, but intellectuals from all over, was a young professor named Robert Alman. Later, his Hebrew name is Saul Alman. This Professor Alman later became famous because he won the Nobel Prize for game theory. Brilliant person. Yeah. This Professor Alman would come weekly to that chair. He had a son serving in the Israeli army and was killed in a battle. Rav Gusman paskened that he took his Talmidim to the Lavaya, Yeshiva Bachim. Someone comes to the Shir and they came and they stayed for the Kavura. And then right after, Talmidim went back to the Yeshiva. Rav Gusman said he wanted to go meet Menachem Avil. One of the Talmidim took him to this Professor Alman's house. The professor, you know, saw him and said, thank you so much, it's so meaningful that you took your yeshiva to my son's Levaya, son's Kura. But Rav Gusman, now's the time for you to go back. Please, please. And Rav Gusman says, no, I'm staying. He says, you lost a son. I also lost a son. You lost a son and are Baruch Hashem able to sit Shiva. I never sat Shiva on my son. I'm sitting with you. And then he tells him, that's what he said, amazing. He says, your son right now is going up to Shemayim. He's being greeted by my son. You know what they have in common? They both died al Kiddush Hashem. But it's not only that. Your son is a Shliach Tzibur. My son, he was a 4-year-old boy. He died al Kiddush Hashem. But he didn't save others. Didn't protect others in the line of duty what he was doing. But your son was. And that's very, very chashuv. This Professor Alman told him, he said, I didn't think there'd be anyone able to give me nechama. He said, you're the one person giving nechama. A Rav, a Posek, whose entire life was focused on the sensitivities for others, doesn't just come out with good piskei halacha. He comes out a walking Kiddush Hashem, everything he does, interacts with people. Amazing. How is it that the world didn't hear of such an amazing person? And one last story, which is both a famous story. After the war, in his yeshiva in eventually yeshiva that he had in Rechavia. Rechavia is a nice place, right? The yeshiva had a garden of flowers. Rav Gusman himself was the gardener who took care of those flowers, planted those flowers, watered those flowers every day. And I saw a few different pshatim. Why did Rav Gusman do it? One interesting thing. Come on, son, his wife, you know, survived the war. Had one daughter. But his Francis told me this too. His wife was Sabrachan. She very rarely went out. And Rav Gusman said, you know, I'm lucky. Lule Saroska Shashuai, if not for the fact that I have Torah to reinvigorate me, I'd be broken just like my wife. His wife rarely left the apartment, but the window of their apartment, they lived in the yeshiva, the window of her apartment overlooked that garden. He made sure that that garden looked beautiful. But it wasn't just that. During the war, and this is only makes sense of with Chachamim, who have Ruach HaKodesh, one time he was walking with Reb Chaim Ozer, talking and learning. And they're walking, you know, the forest. And in the middle of their learning, Reb Chaim Ozer said, "This bush, these berries are kosher berries. You could eat those. These ones you can't. This you could, this you can't." And randomly, as they're walking and learning, he's giving them a lesson in botany. I don't know. Telling them these random things about plants, which ones you could eat, can't eat. During the war, Rev Gusman survived. Actually, at one point, he was a partisan running through. He spent time living, he literally lived in pits, in pigs' pens, hiding and surviving the war. The thing that kept him alive was eating berries and leaves that he found in the forest that he knew were good because Rav Gusman showed him. So when he reestablishes yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, that garden was Hakaras HaTov, he was Makar Tov. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't hit the water that saved him, but Gusman took care of the flowers that saved him. Such a sensitive soul, such an amazing posek. This prodigy of a posek, we may not have so much of his psakim, but his impact, what it means to be a Gadol B'Yisrael, to be a posek, was felt in anyone who met him. Rabbi Francis told me this heartwarming story of how he ran into someone in Chicago years later that was in the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael with him. And he said they met, and all they could talk about was Rav Gusman, Rav Gusman. And you see from here the impact of what a Gadol B'Yisrael, what a posek, is able to have on people. His Piskei Halacha matched the sensitivity, Darcher Darchei Noam, and his memory should be a schus for all of us. Yes.